It's my time to waste, I said, then grimaced at the magnitude of the whole thing. This whole deal sucked. She knows what's at stake, right? I have no doubt. A muscle in his jaw twitched. He couldn't hide his anger at Heather for putting him in a position to have to deal with her. She's playing a big game. If her intention was to infiltrate, or some other scheme, she knows the consequences. He likes Heather, I realized with a bit of surprise, though at the same time I could totally see it. She was tough and capable and pretty damn likable. He didn't want to lock her up and do ugly things to extract info, and it was clear he didn't want to kill her. But I also knew that he wouldn't let that get in the way of whatever he had to do to ensure the security of Pietro's organization. Brian leveled his impassive, professional gaze on me. You budge her, Angel, and I'll kiss you. I gave a surprised bark of laughter. I'm gonna hold you to that, you know. I'm not putting on the chapstick just yet, he said as he pushed off the desk, but I hope it comes down to that. He hesitated, then continued with a tightness in his voice that sounded a lot like worry. Angel, if she doesn't open up, it won't be pretty. I winced, sighed. Yeah, I kinda gathered that. And I was the one who'd talked her into coming over to our side. Or had I? Anger flashed. If she really was trying to infiltrate, I'd been a convenient patsy, one who opened the damn door and invited her in. That stirred more questions, but there was only one person who could answer them. Whether guilty is all sin or hiding some other reason for her behavior, I wanted to know. I'd killed for it. For Brian's sake, as well as to bolster my fading conviction in her innocence, I said, maybe it will all work out. He gave a slow nod. See what you can do. He paused. Please, he added, almost like a prayer. Gotcha, I said, and flashed him a tight smile. Let me at her. Chapter 15. Brian walked me around the corner and down a hallway. Remember, she's good at what she does, he told me. She's, easy to open up to. Yeah, I've noticed that, I remarked, as he stopped before a windowless door. Here's her room, he said. He punched a key code into the obviously locked door. I'll be monitoring. I took a deep breath, then entered and closed the door behind me. Heather sat propped in a hospital bed with a rolling table in front of her, pencil in hand, drawing what looked like an intricate swirling abstract. Her left arm sported a bandage and sling to go along with her splint, and traces of bruising showed on her face. A pile of drawings lay on the table beside her hand along with more blank white paper. A dozen or so origami animals of various types clustered on a built-in counter to my right. A doorway led into a small bathroom, no frills and nothing dangerous. Pretty much a secure hospital room. Hey, chick, I said with a bright smile. You look better than the last time I saw you. Heather set the pencil down and hurriedly shoved her drawing under the others, then stacked the rest of the blank paper on top of them. I let my gaze linger on the drawings and origami. She'd been busy, or incredibly bored. She pushed up from the pillows, wincing faintly as if the movement tweaked an existing headache. Did I look that bad? She asked, still managing a broad smile for me. I thought it had a street-savvy flair about it. Right, more like roadkill flair, I said with a snort, though I don't have much room to talk. Nope, you had me beat, I think. She let out a low chuckle. The hanging jaw, the bullet holes, I was definitely outclassed. I've had too much practice, I said, as I leaned up against the counter next to the origami. You've been busy. I picked up a little unicorn and peered at the little twisted horn. She glanced at the animals, then the pile of papers beside her. Yeah, otherwise I'd go stir crazy. I set the unicorn next to a paper praying mantis, resisted the urge to play with him and make it look as if the mantis was eating the unicorn. This is really cool, I said. About all I can do is an origami baseball. She smiled, obviously well aware that an origami baseball was nothing more than a wadded-up piece of paper. Paper and pencil were all I could wheedle out of Jacques. and I think I'm still in deep debt for the sharpener. You must have done the dragon that's sitting on his computer then, right? I asked. Her smile widened with a touch of pleased surprise. It's on his computer. Perched right on his monitor, I replied. Nice, she said, for a brief instant looking relaxed and happy. Thanks for telling me that. I lifted my chin toward the pile of papers by her hand. What you drawing? She didn't seem to be shy about the origami, so why be that way with the drawings? She laid her hand on top of the stack of papers. Oh, just doodles to kill time, that's all. I sat at the foot of the bed, pulled my legs underneath me. What little I'd seen sure wasn't a simple doodle. The girl had some talent. So what's going to happen to you next? I asked, still keeping my voice light. How soon you getting out of here? Heather shook her head. No idea. Dr. Nika says he's keeping me for observation. She shrugged. Other than this, she gestured toward her left arm with the broken fingers and gunshot wound. I feel okay. A little headachey, that's all. Right. I mean after that, I said, watching her carefully. You gonna come work for Pietro? Is that what you want? A whisper of what looked like anxiety tightened the skin around her eyes, but then she gave me a bright smile and it was gone. Oh yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, that's your whole goal, right? I continued, all of the lightness leaving my voice. All of this bullshit? That's what this was all about, right? Get in as one of us. I cocked my head as her smile faded. Ryan knows you're not just a photographer. She sank back into the pillows, expression bleak, but not showing surprise. Damn. Brian said I could come in and talk to you, I said. Maybe get the whole story. He'll probably want to talk to you after I'm done here. My eyes dropped to her broken fingers. He said hi to you once already. I don't think you'd like a whole conversation. Her throat bobbed as she swallowed. Not that kind of conversation. Then talk to me instead, I urged. Damn it. I liked her, and I really wanted to believe she was for real, but I sure had a bad vibe going on. What's going on? Was this whole thing a setup so that you could infiltrate? She looked away, mouth tightening. I guess that's what it looks like. My heart sank. Had I really been duped so thoroughly? That's incredibly fucked up, I said, voice shaking a little from the disappointment. You used me. I shook my head, still trying to make sense of it all. Were those really Saberton men who were after you? Did you actually kill your own people? She gave a tight nod. They were Saberton. I stared at her for several seconds before finding my voice. Wow, that's cold, I managed. All to get in with us. Did they know? Did they know you were trying to infiltrate? Something flashed through her eyes, pain or anger, I couldn't be sure. But when she looked back to me, her expression was hard. Those guys? She shook her head. No. They had orders to capture me. Only way to make it look real. Her mouth twisted. Problem was, they called in Egerton, the zombie. He wasn't supposed to be there, and I almost got killed. I stood, hands clenched. Only way to make it look real, I echoed. And so you set me up to kill a guy and fuck up another. I took a ragged breath, stomach churning. I killed someone because of you, you heartless bitch. Yeah, and it would have worked if I hadn't gotten hurt, she replied, voice flat and cold. Something flickered briefly in her eyes to disturb the icy facade, but she quickly controlled it before continuing. I'd have met with Brian under different circumstances, and he'd never have known he was being played. He thought I was, she made air quotes, paparazzi after our first encounter, remember? Anger coiled tight in my chest, yet I couldn't ignore the insistent doubts. Parts of her story didn't make complete sense. How did you know I'd come out and confront you at the diner? She twitched a shoulder up in a shrug. You wanted to come after me before, in front of that dead girl's house. I figured if I walked into the diner, you'd take the bait. Frowning, I cast my memory back over that night. Heather had been wearing a hoodie, and she sure as hell hadn't looked like someone who wanted to be seen or recognized. "Really?" I asked. "You were going to stroll in and somehow make me believe you were on the run?" My frown deepened as more holes the size of Texas appeared in her version. "And how do you know I had Brian's number? And that I would even call him?" Her cool composure cracked, and a bizarre flash of primal fear lit her eyes. She tugged a hand through her hair, wound a lock around one finger. "That one guy shot you." I was talking as much to help me figure it out as to confront her. "Why would he do that if he was just trying to bring me back?" More and more holes kept appearing in this whole infiltration story. I scowled, shook my head. "And God almighty, if they had to pick someone to infiltrate, surely it would be someone with a better plan." She viciously wound the lock of hair around her finger over and over. "My plans haven't worked out so great lately," she said. To my shock, she seemed close to tears. It didn't look right on her somehow. I stared at the hair twisting as mental clues shifted and fell into something recognizable. I remembered the last time I saw someone twist hair like that. Nicole Saber at the Gourmet Gala. Now I saw the same tilt of the eyes, the blonde hair, the profile, and she knew about the reclusive Richard Saber. "Oh my God," I breathed. "That's it. You're related to Nicole Saber somehow, aren't you?" Her posture shifted subtly, a feral look coming into her eyes. Before I could blink, she vaulted from the bed, knocking me aside as she dove for the door. Stumbling back, I cursed my not very tanked state as I sprawled against the tray table, scattering origami animals. I expected her to tug vainly at the door handle, but to my shock, she yanked it open. What the hell? I scrambled up and out the door, made a wild snatch at the sleeve of her hospital gown, barely succeeding in getting enough of a hold to slow her as she tried to bolt down the hallway. Behind me, I heard a door burst open and running footsteps, Brian, no doubt. Heather spun and struck a hard punch at my forearm, loosening my grip enough for her to twist free. "Would you chill?" I yelled, then jumped on her in a clumsy tackle before she could turn and run. She outweighed me by 30 pounds or so and topped me by at least half a foot, but she went down under my clinging assault. Didn't stop her from fighting, though. She clocked me in the side of the head with her good fist and managed to knee me in the ribs hard enough to knock the wind out of me. "Stop," I wheezed, "you stubborn bitch." My eloquent plea had no effect, but Brian's arrival did. In about 5 seconds, he had her face down, a knee between her shoulder blades, and was effectively zip-tying her wrists behind her back. Breathing hard, Heather continued to fight, though there was no budging Brian. Blood seeped through the bandage over the gunshot wound in her bicep, likely reopened by her struggles. Brian finished securing the zip ties. "Jacques," he called, then looked up at me. "Let's get her back on the bed." I helped him get Heather up to her feet. I expected her to go limp, but she continued to try and twist away, even though she had to know there was no possible way she was breaking free from two zombies, one of whom was no doubt tanked to the gills considering how quickly he made it down the length of the hall. "Jesus Christ," I said to Heather, breathing a bit hard myself. "It's true, isn't it? What are you, her daughter or something?" I might as well have been asking the wall. She kept her jaw clenched tight as we got her back into the room and onto the bed. Jacques arrived at a run, and Brian jerked his gaze to him. "Restraints." I stepped back as the two men efficiently removed the zip ties and secured her wrists and ankles to the bed with medical restraints. Heather pulled futilely at them, a look of wide-eyed panic on her face. "No, please." "What will you do now?" I asked Brian, worry rising. "Make a phone call," he replied in a tight voice. Jacques looked from the still-struggling Heather to Brian. "Sedative?" "No." "No, wait," I said. "Don't sedate her yet, and don't call yet." In reply, Brian stood back and folded his arms, face impassive as he regarded me. Taking that as a temporary victory, I swung my attention to Heather. "It's out now. For fuck's sake, defend yourself. Are you related to Nicole Saber? Is that what this is all about?" She gave one more useless tug on the restraints, then dropped her head back to the pillow. "Yes," she replied, voice breaking. I was born Julia Saber. Nicole Saber is my mother. I attempted to put it all together and shock and obtrusively replaced the bandage on the sluggishly bleeding wound on her arm, spread a blanket over her, and then quietly slipped from the room. You really were leaving town, weren't you? I finally asked her. Leaving Saberton. A shiver went through her as she nodded, not meeting anyone's eyes. Oh, man, I breathed. And so you figured if Pietro and Brian knew, they'd pretty much get everything you knew out of you any way they could. Then I frowned. But they were planning to do that anyway since you were holding back, and you had to know that. What gives? Better than risking getting ransomed back, Heather said, voice breaking. She swung her gaze to Brian. Please, don't. Don't let them have me back. An odd scent filled the air, thick and cloying, and it took me a few seconds to realize what it was. Her fear. I could smell her fear. Oh, my God. My gaze fell on the pile of drawings. She hadn't wanted me to look too closely at them. Narrowing my eyes, I scooped the pile up, pulled the bottom drawing out, and peered at it. At first, all I saw were the mesmerizing spirals. Then I took a closer look at the unfinished corner, fought to make sense of it. Tiny letters. I rotated the drawing, and with much squinting, made out, S.C. New Orleans Waterfront, followed by the word key and a series of numbers. The key code for a Saberton Corporation building? In the finished sections of the drawing, more hidden lettering, cleverly disguised as part of the picture. I don't understand, I said, dragging my eyes back to hers. Sighing, she gave a half-hearted pull at the restraints. That was for after I was dead, or escaped. It's all there, on the drawings. Her breath shuddered. I wanted to help no matter what happened to me. My amazement increased as I flipped through the pages. In each of the dozen or so finished drawings, I picked out tiny lettering, worked into the intricate and beautiful abstract designs, or curving around the edges of the figures. Without a magnifying glass, I couldn't get much from them other than the realization that she'd meticulously offered a shitload of information. More details, more confidential and proprietary information that I had no doubt would be damn useful to Pietro and his organization. I looked over at Brian, passed the drawings to him. Expression grim, he took them while I returned my attention to Heather. What would happen if you got ransomed back? Best case scenario is they'd kill me, she said. The cloying scent of fear thickened. Worst is they'd use me. Brian tucked the drawings under his arm and exited the room, expression not shifting at all from grim. I had a feeling I knew, but I had to ask it anyway. Use you? How? They need test subjects. Zombie research. Yeah, I bet they did. I'll tell you right now I won't let that happen, I assured her. Heather's gaze went to the sprinkler above her, then dropped back to me. No matter what it takes? She asked, voice quiet but intense. I can't go back there. I knew exactly what she was asking me. I flicked my own glance at the sprinkler, which I realized probably housed a camera or something. Whatever it takes, I said. Somehow. Shit. I'd worked in the morgue for long enough to know the human weak spots, and I was pretty sure I knew how to kill someone quickly. But damn, could I kill someone I actually liked? And yes, I did like her, despite everything. I looked back to her. Why did you leave? It's a bit of a long story, she sighed. I'm not going anywhere. She tried to lift a hand, but was brought up short by the restraints. A mixture of annoyance and resignation passed over her face before she began to speak again. Late last Friday, my zombie friend Garrett got called in for a checkup, but never came back. She exhaled. I tend not to let things like that rest, and went looking for him early the next morning. I knew where he'd gone, so I figured that was the best place to start, and got in without tripping the alarm, no problem. At first, I thought it was exactly what I was expecting, a medical station. But there was a gas chromatograph mass spectrometer, microscope, fume hood, and other equipment that made me think more of some sort of lab, Heather explained. I'd only been in a minute when I heard someone unlocking the door, and I ducked into a side room. She hesitated, and a look of revulsion mixed with anger came over her. The room wasn't empty. Garrett was there, strapped to an exam table, alive, and vivisected, with all sorts of monitors and tubes connected to him. He had duct tape over his mouth, and she swallowed. And the look in his eyes. Oh, my God. Fury welled within me, but I stayed silent. The door opened, and I barely had time to press myself against the far side of a cabinet and pray whoever it was wouldn't look my way, she said. A man came in, took some blood and direct organ samples, messed with the monitors, all while talking shit to Garrett about how he'd be there a long time, so he better get used to it. Said he'd be back in a while for more samples, then headed out. Jesus, I breathed. The whole thing set off something I'd never felt before, she said with a shake of her head, beyond anger. It was still and focused and kind of scary. I fed Garrett brains until he, could get himself back together and wouldn't kill me for my own, unhooked and unstrapped him, then went and found the guy who'd been cutting on him. She paused, mouth tightening. By that time, I'd recognized him as Brent from research and development, but it didn't matter that I knew him. A haunted look came over her face. I had every intention of killing him. Wait, Brent Stewart? I exclaimed, the movie set victim. I knew there was more to that. She swallowed, nodded. I followed him, looking for a place where I could make it seem like an accident. Once he got onto the school grounds and behind the trailers, I knew it wouldn't get much better. I hit him hard in the head with a 2x4, then pulled the scaffold pipe down to mask the blow. You did a good job, I told her. It's still classified as an accident. She lifted her eyes to mine. I know. Pretty cold-blooded. I shrugged. I sure as hell couldn't judge her. I'd have probably done the same damn thing if some asshole was torturing a friend. What happened to Garrett? I asked. He headed off with a bag of brain slices and a plan to go into hiding big time. Haven't seen him since. Sick anger flashed over her face. Garrett worked hard as a driver. I know he didn't have any idea what he was getting into when he signed on with Saberton. They promised him a regular supply of brains, didn't tell him what else they intended. My gut was tight with horror over the whole scenario, but I simply nodded. So I'd gotten an up-close and personal look at what Saberton was doing with zombies, and I'd killed one of the research guys, Heather continued, voice strained. But they hadn't figured out it was me. I wasn't ready to jump ship yet, but I wanted to know more about my options. I went back to check out some Saberton confidentials on Mr. Ivanov's organization. I got into the security feeds without any problems. She said it as if it was nothing. But what I saw... Her face paled. What was it? I prompted. Her eyes went to me. The first video I pulled of any significance was of you, Angel, she said to my utter surprise. I saw everything Christy Cherish's team did to you. Locking you in a cage, searching you. She swallowed. And what they made you do to Philip and Aaron. Numb, cold horror set in. Videos of all that are out where people can see them? But Heather was still talking. And there were more videos. With Philip when he bit Tim Bell and Roland Westfield. And with some other zombies later. Tears came to her eyes. With my mother and brother right there, condoning all of it. I considered everything she told me.
What exactly did you do for Saberton?
Heather twisted her head to wipe her eyes on her shoulder. On the surface, I worked in the PR department and was a photographer for them, she said. In reality, I did industrial espionage, and I was good at it. She said it as a statement of fact, no ego attached. My grandfather had done some espionage-type work for the military. He figured out early on that I loved it. So he taught me, doted on me, groomed me almost my whole life. An odd sadness touched her eyes. My mother didn't seem to have any problem with it. Encouraged it, even. So at an early age, Nicole Saber's daughter dropped out of memory, presumed off at boarding school, and I got to do what I loved. Pretty lucky, huh? I made a noncommittal grunt. In light of recent developments, I didn't think she was feeling all that lucky. No one other than my grandfather, mother, brother, and a few insiders knew me as anything other than Heather Lucas, a nobody corporate photographer. And I guess it was all just a big game for me until Kang, and then Garrett, and the vids. Tears glimmered in her eyes again, but it's not a game. No, I said quietly, it really isn't. She sighed, expression haunted. Yeah, can't just call a do-over. And now I know how dirty I am. Life really sucks sometimes. I gave a soft snort. I know suck, trust me. If I hadn't freaked the hell out when you ID'd me as a Saber, I had the big plan of escaping tonight. I already had the door disabled. Not that I wanted to go, but I had to, you know? Heather took a deeper breath, glanced up at the sprinkler. I swear, in those drawings I gave you everything I had that's of use. I had no doubt Brian was making a lot of phone calls right now. What happened after Brian caught you taking pics? Heather made a pained face. I already knew I wanted out, no doubt about it. But getting out from under Saberton would take some time and planning. At the hospital after Brian, she lifted her splinted hand slightly. I had the fantasy that I could just switch sides. She let out a low snort. Like anything is that simple when dealing with this kind of thing. So I let that go and headed back to my hotel room to come up with an exit strategy. She grimaced. I gave her a keep going nod. My brother was there, she said after a moment. Andrew Saber. And everything went downhill after that. I remembered him from the gala, tall, blonde, and serious. He knew? Her grimace deepened. He knew I'd killed Brent Stewart, put pressure on me about getting myself in line with the company philosophy, threatened to let our mother know I'd killed the guy if I didn't. She let out a shuddering breath. Mother can be vicious, and I know my brother really well. I'd never be anything but his bitch for life if I agreed. I should have let it go, should have agreed to do anything just to get out of there, but I was exhausted, on edge and already doubting so much. A look of anguish came over her features. Did you kill him too? I asked uncertainly. No, she replied, eyes widening in shock. She shook her head in a firm motion. No, God no. But I didn't let it go when I should have. I told him I was through with all of the Saberton crap. She winced. Not a good thing to say to the next CEO. We argued and it turned ugly. Physical. He's stronger, but I'm quicker, and I've had more training. I got in a lucky punch that laid him out and left him hogtied with the bedsheet. She looked at me. That's when I knew it was over. They'd never trust me again. And so I had no choice but to run. Right then, with no plans or arrangements made. Okay. Wow. I fell silent for a moment while I processed it all. I'm gonna help you any way I can, I finally said. She gave me a weak smile. You already did. The rest is gravy. I mean it, I said, frowning. I'm real good at doing stupid shit, and I'm gonna bring it hard if Brian doesn't come in here with a goddamn welcome home fruit basket. Her brow creased in worry. Angel, it's okay. There won't be any welcome home fruit basket, and it's okay. I don't want you getting yourself messed up over this. Really. No, it's not okay, I stated firmly. That's not all there is to it. Damn it. She shifted in the restraints, tried unsuccessfully to sit up. Don't. Please don't do anything stupid. and you know it would be. I mean, you have no idea how cool it is that you have my back, but it would still end the same. I gave a snort of amusement, smiled. You really don't know me very well, do you? Oh, man, she winced. I'm afraid I do. I won't let them do bad shit to you, I said with a shake of my head. I can't. The door opened, and Brian entered with one of the drawings in his hand, face in unreadable mode. Heather's gaze went to the drawing and tears welled up in her eyes. Yeah, no fruit basket. What's going on? I demanded. Brian? She's the one who turned us over to Saberton 4 years ago, he said, voice even but carrying a dark undertone that sent a chill down my back. It's why they know about zombies. Why they know so much about zombies. My heart dropped into my stomach. How? Brian opened his mouth to speak, but Heather beat him to it. Got into one of Mr. Ivanov's safes, she said. I copied a bunch of research material. I didn't realize what it was until later. She grimaced. After that, I spent almost a year gathering more information on zombies. That's how I ended up with John Kang. Damn, I breathed, but then I shook my head. Lifting my chin, I looked back to Brian. You can't lay all that at her feet. Cherish was ready to sell us out to the highest bidder. It would have happened at some point. Brian seemed unmoved. Angel, I need to speak with Heather alone now. Yeah, I said tightly. That's not going to happen. It has to happen, he stated. I give you my word that nothing will happen to Heather in that time. I hesitated, but the memory of the hole in the office wall rose. He wouldn't have punched a wall in frustration if he was totally okay with treating her like the enemy. Okay, I said. I'm trusting you. And with that, I gave Heather's hand a squeeze and stepped out. I obediently went off with the taciturn Jacques and allowed him to draw vials and vials of blood, after which I downed a fresh, warm puff pastry stuffed with brains and a to-die-for smoothie that Jacques called Dr. Nikas's special blend. It sure beat the hell out of juice and cookies. Yet then I had to wait, very impatiently, for what was close to half an hour before Brian returned. Didn't help that all I had to read was a decade-old issue of Field and Stream. Seriously, what the hell? Didn't zombies keep up their magazine subscriptions? When Brian came to get me, his face was still utterly unreadable. I stood and set the magazine down, crossed my arms defiantly over my chest, and looked up at him with as much authority as a short and skinny high school dropout zombie could muster. I'm not much of a fighter, Brian, I warned him in a low voice, but I'm mean, and I don't quit. So I sure as hell hope you have something good to tell me. His expression turned grim, and dread curled into a tight knot in my gut as he approached. God damn it, Brian, I said, unable to keep my voice from shaking in anger and stress. Have you already done something awful to her? I caught a faint whiff of cherry, and then before I could react, the stoic Brian Archer took hold of my shoulders and planted a big brotherly cherry chapstick-laden smooch right on my lips. He'd smeared it on extra thick, too, the bastard. No. He pulled back, faint smile playing about his mouth. A laugh of delirious relief burst out of me, even as I wiped the thick smudge of lip balm off my mouth with the back of my hand. Oh, my God, you must have used half a stick. So everything's okay? She's gonna be okay? He gave my shoulders a squeeze before dropping his hands back to his sides. We're taking her in. As in, not fucking her up? And not ransoming her back? I asked, still a bit wary. You'll let her defect, or whatever it's called in the corporate world. More than that, he said with a slight shake of his head. Everything checked out. Andrew Saber was treated in private for a lacerated cheek on the night in question. She answered all of my other questions correctly, even the personal and the hard ones. He took a deep breath, smiled, and, well, she smells right. The fear's gone. She can't fake that. So unless she does something incredibly stupid, she's one of us. Good, I said with a grin of relief.
I really didn't want to get ugly with y'all. Brian chuckled. Trust me, Angel. None of us want that.
Chapter 16.
To my relief, my dad's truck wasn't in the driveway when Brian dropped me off. He waited politely until I unlocked my front door and gave him a wave before he pulled away and drove off. As soon as I was inside, I pulled my phone out of my purse and called Marcus, excitement about the lab visit and relief about Heather's fate still shimmering through me.
"Hey, you,"
he answered, a smile in his voice. "Oh, my God, Marcus," I said as I plopped onto the couch. "I got to see Kang's head. It was so... ew." I laughed.
"Really? That's..."
He paused.
"Wait, how did you see Kang's head?"
"I called Pietro this morning to ask him what was going on with the heads, and he said I could go see for myself. So he sent Brian to pick me up, and so I went."
"So cool." "Brian picked you up, huh?"
There was a strange catch in his voice, but I was too excited to want to stop and figure out why. "Yeah, and damn, I've never ridden in an Escalade before," I continued to babble. "Sweet ride."
"I've never been to Brian's Escalade," he said. "I imagine it is."
He paused.
"And he took you to the lab?"
"Sure did. Way out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere," I laughed. "I couldn't find it again if my life depended on it."
"I have no idea where it is either,"
Marcus said.
"So it was interesting."
"It really was," I said. "I mean, I don't understand half of what Dr. Nikas was saying, but he was really awesome and didn't talk down to me at all." I grinned. "Maybe after I get my GED, I can go take some college classes. I mean, I really love the biology stuff."
"That's not a bad idea at all."
"And maybe I could even do some work with Dr. Nikas, help out at the lab or something. Marcus, he was so nice."
Yeah, sure," he said. "That would be great."
Except that it didn't sound like he thought it would be great at all. My smile slipped a bit. "Marcus, is something wrong?" He was silent for a few seconds, long enough for me to wonder if he had horrible news to share and was working up the courage to tell me. Then said,
"Angel, you can't do that."
"Do what?" I asked, baffled.
"You can't call up Pietro with stuff like that," he said to my utter shock. "I'm only telling you for your own good."
He continued while I listened in numb silence.
"Pietro said he'd let you know about the heads, and he would have. Annoying him isn't a good idea.
And, well,
taking up Dr. Nikas's time for nothing. Hell, I've never even been to the lab."
Every speck of elation fled, and now I simply felt cold and a little sick. Had I misread everything about my conversation with Pietro and my talk with Dr. Nikas? But Pietro didn't sound annoyed, Marcus, I managed. And he's the one who suggested I come see the heads. I didn't ask for that.
"Look, babe, you could have called me first, talked about it,"
he said in a conciliatory tone.
"Then I could have helped you with how to approach or not approach it. I've known him a lot longer than you have."
The cold feeling tightened into a knot in my gut. "Oh, I see," I replied stiffly. I obviously fucked it up, even though Pietro seemed perfectly happy to talk to me and was the one to suggest that I come see the lab. But, you know, this is me, so yeah. I should check with you before I make a phone call. I sucked in a sharp breath. "Oh, wait, honey. I need to go take a shit. Should I wipe my ass or not? One ply or two ply?" "I know I desperately need your advice and guidance."
"Damn it, Angel,"
he retorted, raising his voice slightly.
"You're blowing this all out of proportion. We're talking about my uncle, not your normal everyday life crap."
"And you're the one telling me I need to check with you before making a goddamn phone call," I said, raising my voice right back at him. "I mean, Jesus Christ, Marcus, you're jumping my ass for fucking something up that wasn't fucked up." At least I hoped it wasn't fucked up. A sharp barb of worry went through me. "Did Pietro say something to you? Is that what this is all about?" He hesitated.
"No,"
he finally said, exhaling.
I haven't talked to him since I called him last night after your attack.
Uh-huh.
So once again, this is you not trusting me to be able to handle myself. My jaw tightened. Marcus, this is bullshit.
You always jump to that conclusion, Angel, he said, frustration and annoyance thick in his voice. I'm giving you advice, damn good advice, on one thing I know a hell of a lot more about than you do, and suddenly I'm the bad guy. That's bullshit.
I didn't do anything wrong, I insisted, fighting back tears. He wasn't annoyed or mad or anything, and he wouldn't have invited me to the lab if I was wasting his time, would he?
I took a deep breath as the old buried anger returned.
And goddamn it, even if I did annoy him, that's the least he could put up with after everything I went through.
He fell quiet.
All right, Angel,
he said after a moment.
What's done is done. You've seen the heads and satisfied that curiosity, so we can just move on from here. I can't imagine that you'd have anything else to call him about, so it really is a moot point now.
I squeezed my eyes shut. Marcus, I've been really nice and respectful to your uncle, even after everything that happened. I tried to keep my voice even and calm, but it still shook a bit despite my best efforts. Pietro told me I could call him any time I needed something, and you know what? If I have another reason to call him, I fucking will. My hand tightened on the phone. I was locked in an animal cage because of him, strip-searched by McKinney while four men stood and watched. So if I want to call him for the goddamn time and weather, I fucking will, and I'm not going to worry about annoying him.
I heard him exhale.
I know,
he said.
You had a horrible experience, and a lot of it was Uncle Pietro's fault. It's still crazy to push it, but never mind. You don't want my opinion, and this isn't getting us anywhere.
I was crying now. How could he still not understand?
No, it's not getting us anywhere, and you don't want to hear how bad it was, so forget it. I'll talk to you later.
I hung up before he could say anything else, then buried my face in the couch pillow and gave into a sob fest. For the first time, I realized that I really didn't have anyone I could talk to about what happened to me. I sure as hell couldn't tell any non-zombie. Marcus had held me and listened to the whole story after my escape, but after that one time it was clear the subject upset him, so I'd stopped saying anything about it. My phone rang. It was Marcus, but I wasn't ready to talk to him yet. After a moment, the ringing stopped, and it dinged with a missed call alert, but he didn't leave a voicemail, and I didn't call him back. Chapter 17. A sound woke me. A dull thumping, but without any particular rhythm or cadence. Early morning light filtered through the blinds, and I sat up, blinking away the remnants of uneasy sleep. The thumping sound repeated, and I looked down at the floor. Water. Water everywhere. For a few precious seconds, I thought that a water pipe had busted in the house. When I was about 10, the pipe leading to the water heater had finally rotted through, and the entire back of the house ended up with an inch of water until my dad could shut it off. But this was way more than an inch. At least a half foot of water covered the floor, lifting anything that could float. A shoebox rocked on its surface, bumping repeatedly into the dresser with a hollow thud. Fear slashed through me as the implications sunk in. I jumped out of bed and splashed through the ankle-deep water, then ran down the hall. Dad! Dad! Oh, please don't let him be sleeping off a bender, I silently prayed. He'd be damn near impossible to wake up. Dad! I yelled.
I shoved his door open, sending a wave rolling across the floor.
He jerked, blinked muzzily at me.
What?
Wake up! I slogged to the bed, grabbed his arm. The house is flooding. The water was halfway up my shin now. He came fully awake in an instant, jerked upright. Shit. It's rising fast, I told him, still tugging at him. Something must have happened to the spillway.
Hold on, he said. Keep your head together now. Go grab anything you can't stand to lose.
That would be you, I snarled. He met my eyes, gaze clear and focused, not sleeping off a bender at all, I realized.
I'm good, Angelkins.
He stood and began to paw through his nightstand.
Give me a minute. I gotta get some stuff. I wanted to scream at him that we needed to go now, but I realized there was some stuff I needed to get to. I splashed back to my bedroom, water up to my knees and halfway up the side of the mini-fridge in my room. Willing my hands not to shake, I spun the lock and put the combination in. Dad had been cool the past few months, but after the one horrible experience of him destroying my stash, I'd kept a lock on the fridge just in case, but damn, I hated it now. On the second try, I got the damn thing open, grabbed the 5 bottles of Brain Smoothie and tossed them onto the bed. Still at least a foot to go before that was underwater. My cargo pants were in the top drawer of my dresser, thankfully. Trying to pull on wet pants would have been a nightmare, and I really didn't want to try to escape the flood in my pink underwear. I snagged a pair of pants out of the drawer, jumped onto the bed to tug them on, then shoved 2 bottles into each side pocket and zipped them shut. The 5th, I slugged down as fast as I could. Best place to store brains right now was inside of me. Shoes were a lost cause, though. I always dropped them on the floor, so who the hell knew where they were now? And the water had risen another 1/2 foot at least in the 2 minutes I'd spent getting pants and brains. My phone was on top of the dresser to my relief. I dumped out the contents of a Walmart bag and wrapped my phone in it as best I could, then shoved it in a front pocket. Finally, I pulled on a jacket and headed out into the hallway. Dad! I shoved my way through the now thigh-high water. We need to go. He was already by the door, pants on and also wearing a thin jacket. Come on, he said, motioning me toward him and the door, urgency thick in his voice. Maybe we can... Dad? I choked out, cutting him off, my eyes locked on the view out the window. He followed my gaze and sucked in a breath. The front yard and street beyond was a turbulent rush of water. If we went out there, we'd be at the mercy of the vicious current. I was an okay swimmer and could most certainly survive drowning, but not my dad. No zombie parasite to get him through it, and he wasn't a good swimmer at all. I seized his hand. Attic, I told him. Pulse racing 1 mile a minute. We need to get to the roof. We shoved through the still rising water, and then he had to boost me up to reach the broken cord for the attic access. The fold-down ladder was a scary and rickety thing, and after a brief screaming match about who should go first, my dad made it almost to the top before it gave way on one side. He managed to get up the rest of the way, then I used a bit of zombie power to haul myself up the broken ladder and into the attic. I expected it to be pitch dark up there, but my dad had a flashlight he now shone around. There was a flashlight up here? I asked. Grabbed it from the kitchen, he said. Glad I did. But now I'm wishing I'd grabbed a crowbar or hatchet. Only crowbar is in the shed out back, I reminded him, which was probably completely underwater at this point. He scowled, but deep lines of worry framed his eyes. The water was still rising, steadily creeping up the ladder, and we both knew stories of people who drowned because they fled into their attics during Hurricane Katrina, only to find themselves trapped. I knew people who lived in flood-prone areas who kept hatchets or axes in their attics so they could cut their way through the roof in a worst-case scenario. But we'd never bothered to do anything like that. Why the hell would we? That sort of thing happened to other people, not us. Right. My dad continued to sweep the flashlight beam around as if hoping a crowbar or hatchet would magically appear. Damn flood could have waited another couple hours so I could get some damn sleep, he grumbled. I snorted in agreement, then moved to the slope of the roof and rapped my knuckles against the wood. The house was at least 50 years old and hadn't been re-roofed within my memory, so maybe there was some nice convenient weak spot I could bust through. I moved a bit farther down the attic, then flicked a quick glance back at my dad. He was crouched, pawing through boxes that had probably been up here for decades. While his back was turned, I took a deep breath, braced myself with a grip on a rafter, and kicked the plywood of the roof as hard as I could. I felt a snap in my foot, and pain flared, but I managed to make a splintery dent in the plywood. Gritting my teeth against the pain, I kicked again, and succeeded in breaking through enough to see daylight, though I had to stop and take several deep breaths while I waited for the pain to dull. The third kick didn't hurt nearly as much, though I felt something else break in my foot. Yet now a definite hole rewarded my efforts. I gave a feral smile of triumph and grabbed at the edge of the slight gap, pushing and ripping plywood and tar paper away. The sound of rushing water filtered through the hole, and a glance back at the attic entrance showed me that the water was almost to the top of the ladder. It also showed my dad staring at me in shock.
"Angel?"
he said with a distinct tremor in his voice.
"What the hell are you doing?"
For a brief moment, I considered coming up with a lie. There was a hole in the roof already. Or, it was a weak spot, super easy to get through, aren't we lucky? But instead, I simply turned back to the hole. "Getting us out of here," I said. I took hold of the edge of the plywood, ripped a long section away and tossed it aside. Light streamed into the attic, and now I saw blood smeared along the wood.
"Your hands,"
he choked out. I looked down. They were shredded and bleeding. A 3-inch-long splinter protruded from the edge of my left palm, and with a calm air I didn't really feel, I pulled it out and dropped it to the attic floor while I tried to ignore the fact that it had been embedded well over an inch deep.
"What the hell's going on, Angel?"
he asked me, eyes meeting mine, silently pleading for a reasonable, sensible answer. Too bad I didn't have one for him.
"It's sort of a medical condition," I said.
That was almost the truth, right? I unzipped a side pocket of my pants and pulled a bottle out, slugged the contents down. I didn't look at my dad, but I felt his eyes on me, watching, wary.
"That's the shit you keep locked up in your room," he stated. "What is it? Some kind of steroids?"
I tossed the empty bottle aside, then looked down at my hands.
"I guess you could say it's a nutritional supplement," I said quietly, watching as the cuts closed up and the flesh became whole again.
My dad's flashlight clattered to the floor of the attic.
What?
He stared at me, confusion and shock battling it out on his face. I gave him a sad look. "It's tough to explain." The fresh influx of brains sang within me. I reached for the plywood, ripped a large piece away as easily as tearing paper.
"Come on,"
I said, hearing the catch in my voice. "We need to get out onto the roof."
"Christ," he breathed.
He shot a look back at the attic opening and the rising water, then swallowed hard and moved toward me. I held a hand out to him. He paused before taking it, eyes on the blood that still clung to my hand, even though the wounds were healed. Uncertainty filled his eyes as he lifted them to mine.
"Are you still my Angelkins?"
I gave him an exasperated look.
"Who the hell else would put up with your whiny bullshit?"
I thrust my hand toward him. "Come on, Dad. Let's get on the damn roof already." To my intense relief, he reached out and took hold of my hand. I gave his a squeeze, flashed him as reassuring a smile as I could manage, then clambered out the hole I'd made and onto the roof. I used the grip on my dad's hand to steady him as much as myself as we scrambled up to the peak of the roof and sat straddling it. For the first time, I got a good look around. Water littered with plastic bottles, trash bags, branches, and other debris swirled a foot below the eaves. The familiar landscape of trees and houses and roads had been replaced by a seething unknown torrent. I dug my fingers into the shingles.
"Dad, we need to tie ourselves together somehow."
He stared aghast at the ongoing destruction.
"All I got is my belt."
"I don't know how much good that'll do," I said. "No way his belt was long enough to go around both of us." I fumbled another bottle of brains out of my pants pocket, gulped it down while I struggled to come up with a solution to our current situation. Whatever happened, I knew staying tanked up was a good idea.
"What are we gonna do?"
he asked.
"Current's too strong for us to do much of anything."
I took an unsteady breath and fought for calm.
"Wait for help as long as we can."
I abruptly sucked in a breath and slapped my hand over my front pocket.
"My phone."
I pulled it out, carefully unwrapping it from the plastic. It appeared to be still dry and, miracle of miracles, I even had a signal. I quickly dialed 911, then did my best not to sound as if I was completely freaked out and panicked as I told the dispatcher that my dad and I were trapped on the roof of our house in the Sweet Bayou area.
"Rescue boats are being mobilized, ma'am,"
the woman told me,
sounding frazzled.
I had no doubt I wasn't the first person to beg for rescue.
They're having trouble with the current, though. The spillway collapsed, and I don't know how long it will take for them to get to you.
I heard the apology in her voice, the knowledge that there was nothing more she could do for us. She was our lifeline, and all she could do was tell us to hold on and hope for the best. I almost felt sorry for her.
Numb, I thanked her, clinging to the niceties out of habit, even as I clung to the roof, and then hung up and stared down at the phone. Now what?
There were no boats in sight, no imminent rescue on the horizon. I should call Marcus, especially after how our conversation ended last night. But then I looked over at my dad. His arms trembled as he gripped the shingles along the rooftop. As much as a makeup call with my not-quite boyfriend might help my emotional state, Marcus wasn't the one who had the best chance of sending the help my dad needed.
"What did they say?" my dad asked.
I didn't try lying to him. He'd know.
"Spillway collapsed," I told him. "Maybe a while before they can get boats to us."
A shudder went through the house, a sensation so scarily unnatural that it set my heart pounding anew. There was only one option I could think of. I punched in Pietro's number, inwardly yelling at him to pick up the damn phone as it rang. On the fourth ring, he picked up.
"Angel."
"Pietro." I had to shout a bit to be heard over the rushing water. It was up over the eaves now. "I need help. Please. There's a flood, and I'm on the roof with my dad. And I know I'm okay, but I'm real worried about him. And 911 says they don't know when rescue boats can get to us, and the house keeps shaking."
"Hang on, Angel," he said.
"Like I have a fucking choice right now," I wanted to shriek, but I kept silent and waited. I heard a rustling and the beeps of another phone being dialed, then, "Brian, I've got an emergency. Angel and her father are on the roof of her house, and, hold on.
Angel, you're at your house, right? How high is the water?"
"Yes, my house. Water is over the eaves," I told him, then let out a small cry as the house shifted slightly beneath us. "Oh, man," I continued, voice shaken. "I don't think we have much time before it goes."
"Pay whatever bonuses you need to get it up right now," I heard.
A few seconds later, Pietro said,
"Angel, we're getting a helicopter to you."
He had such absolute confidence and control in his tone that it was impossible not to feel reassured. Of course, then I looked at the raging water around us and went right back to being in oh shit mode.
"I'm going to connect you with Brian and leave the line open," he went on. "You let him know if anything changes, and hang on to your dad."
I heard some clicks on the line.
"Angel."
That was Brian, calm and cool.
"Can you hear me?"
Yeah, I said, pulse slamming as the house trembled beneath me.
"I have a helicopter headed your way very shortly," he stated. "Should get to you in 10 minutes, max. Has anything changed for you?"
Water's higher. Then I let out a squeal as the house shifted with a hard jerk. "I gotta go. House..." I hung up and shoved the phone into the bag. I didn't expect it to survive this experience, but I had to at least try. Only lifeline I had at the moment. "Dad, put this in your jacket pocket." I thrust my phone at him, and as soon as he took it, I stripped off my windbreaker, then unbuttoned my pants and shimmied them off as quickly as I could. He shoved the bag phone into his pocket and zipped it again, then gave me a baffled look.
"Angel, what the hell are you doing?"
"I need to tie us together," I told him as I knotted a leg of the cargo pants to an arm of the jacket. "Turn around." I waited for him to cautiously shift position, then I scooched as close as I could, wrapped the pants and jacket around the both of us, and tied a double knot in the other arm and leg. I put my arms around him, locked my hands together. God, he felt so damn frail. "Hold on to my arms tight, okay?" My breath caught as the house shifted again. No way it was going to hold for another 10 minutes, or however long it would take to get a helicopter here. At this point, I simply hoped it would stay upright.
"Or maybe a flock of seagulls will swoop down and pluck us off the roof and carry us to safety," my cynical side snarled.
But right now, I felt my dad's heart hammering beneath my arms. He was as scared as I was,
but he was doing his damnedest not to show it.
Trying to be strong for me, doing what he could to protect me.
Dad's hands tightened over mine. "You hang on, you hear me?" he ordered. "You're gonna be okay, Angelkins." I rested my head against his back, closed my eyes, and breathed in everything about